I'm Sean.
And I'm Alex.
And that's Grayson.
And this is Autism Building the Puzzle.
One piece at a time.
Hi, and welcome to Autism Building the Puzzle, one piece at a time. I'm Sean, your host, and I'm back with another one. And today I'm going to be reviewing a whole bunch of different topics, a little bit of everything, a few things from different categories that we really didn't or wouldn't have a full episode on. But I think the main part of the episode is going to be reviewing some of the biggest research studies of the year, top 10. Autism Speaks put out an article on it, so I just wanted to go through that first. But we are getting ready. Christmas here in a couple days. Super excited. Grayson's excited about it. We've been doing a lot of different things, getting, you know, ready. We went on our food shopping trip to get all our food for the holiday, and Grayson absolutely loves it. Also, he was over his me, mom, and pop-ups, my parents' house yesterday, and he really enjoyed hanging out, and he made some gingerbread cookies and with his cousin, Charlotte, and that was fantastic. So he's definitely been enjoying the season. Okay, so let's get to this list of research studies. So first category we have are advances in screening, diagnosis, and interventions. So Dr. Roger S.J. Yoder did a study that was called a multi-site randomized controlled trial comparing the effects of intervention intensity and intervention style on outcomes for young children with autism. The second study was Mazurek Parker. These names are kind of hard. Chan J, Kulthai, Sol K. They work for the Echo Autism Collaborative. And their study was effectiveness of extension of community health outcomes model as applied to primary care for autism. A partial stepped wedge randomized clinical trial. The third study was Wood J.J. Kendall P.C. Wood. This study was cognitive behavioral treatments for anxiety in children with autism spectrum disorder, a randomized clinical study. So these three studies were selected as examples of the advances in autism intervention science. You know, basically, when you look at the first one, they basically looked at children with different intensities and types of, you know, interventions and therapies that they did, and compared the results from each to find out which intensity was most effective and which types of therapies were most effective. The second one was more based on how the community health programs impacted the progress and results of children with autism. And then the last one was basically like a CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. It's very common in a lot of, you know, large amount of the mental health field. I've done some research and took in a class on the basics of CBT therapy. But that talks about ways to treat and diagnose anxiety in children with autism. So those are those three studies. And, you know, you can look up the results of these studies. I'll put, like, I have the link in the show notes. You can get some more information on the studies as well. So the next category we have, there's just one in this category, and it's advances in uncovering and addressing health disparities. Dr. Constantino Abachi and Dr. Saulnier. The title of the study was Timing of the Diagnosis of Autism in African American Children. So we have spoken about some different correlations in time frame when it came to the Vax documentary we were talking about and some of the research that came out of that. So this particular research study is basically addressing the progress and results and the difference in the progress and results of children of African-American descent that started therapy and treatments at different points in time. So obviously, as we know, usually the earlier, you know, you get treatment for your child, the more progress they're going to make. So, I'm sorry, there actually are more in this category. There were just, that first one had so many notes in it, I didn't notice these ones. So, so the next study was Dr. Kat, AJ, Shui, and Dr. Goads. And this one is sex differences in scores on standardized measures of autism symptoms, a multi-site integrative data analysis. So they basically took data from different locations across the country. I'm not sure, it doesn't say here whether it was nationwide or worldwide, but they basically compared the test assessments between boys and girls and what the differences were. And obviously there's, you know, people that don't receive a diagnosis aren't included in this. It's just diagnosed children and the evaluations from, they look at the evaluations from their diagnosis screening and evaluation process. So next we have Dr. Smith, Dr. Genrich, Dr. Iadorola, Dr. Wolf. And their study was disparities in service use among children with autism, a systematic review. So they used data from the Autism Speaks data registry. They found that racial and ethnic minority groups and low-income families face significant barriers to getting needed services. Acute care, specialized services, education services, and community services. I mean, it's pretty simple why. I mean, look at us. We've spent so much money getting services for Grayson. It's not easy to get them. Insurance doesn't always cover everything. You do have early intervention, but that only lasts usually till age 3 in most states, and that's how it is here in New Jersey. You know, they say an average child... To raise an average child from the age of... To raise a kid from, what was it, newborn through 18 on average in the United States, I believe is approximately $700,000. And, you know, that's a national average for neurotypical children. But when you talk about children with autism, it could go all the way up to $2 million, depending on the situation, how much therapies they need, and things like that. So obviously, lower-income families are going to have a lot harder time getting services, especially for prices they can afford. So that is not too much of a surprise to me. Moving on, the next category, we have advances in addressing outcomes for autistic adults. Dr. Simonoff and Dr. Stinger, title, Trajectories and Symptoms of Autism and Cognitive Ability in Autism from Childhood to Adult Life, findings from a longitudinal epidemiological cohort. So basically, this is basically studying about how to increase the IQ of you know, late teens, early adults with autism, how their IQ and symptoms improve as adults. They suggested that there is continued cognitive development over adolescence and early adulthood periods. You know, this is a new finding, and before, previously, a large amount of people believe that once people, you know, many people with autism that were severely deficient in a lot of areas reached young adulthood, their learning process would kind of stop or stall out. So that's pretty awesome to know. That makes me excited for Grayson's future. So next, study eight, we have Dr. McCauley and Pickles, Huerta, and Dr. Lord, defining positive outcomes in more and less cognitively able autistic adults. So, I mean, that's basically classifying what a positive result would be depending on the severity of the person in question. So, depending on how severe they are, what is a positive outcome look like for, you know, ABC severity or DEF severity? Because obviously it's a spectrum disorder, so, you know, people can fall, you know, in all different ranges along that spectrum from A through Z. And depending on where they fall in that, what is a positive or above average, you know, result or progress for that particular or outcome for that particular individual? Next, we have advances in understanding the genetics and biology of autism. This is something I'm pretty interested in and I think is really intriguing for the future. So study 9 is from Dr. Sederstrom, Kosmicki, and Wang. It is called the Large-Scale Exome Sequencing Study Implicates Both Development and Functional Changes in the Neurobiology of Autism. So, don't know too much about some of these super biological scientific words, but the best way I could basically summarize this is that they've discovered that there are developmental and functional changes in the neurobiology of people with autism. Again, I'm going to post this so you guys could take a deeper dive into it if you so choose. Study 10 is from Dr. Trost, Nguyen, and Nguyen, and it is titled Genome-Wide Detection of Tandem DNA Repeats That Are Expanded in Autism. So this is how they look for genetic markers and what markers indicate there might be a propensity for autism. So, you know, I think it's important. I mean, me and Alex are getting a test done because we're looking to have some more children. And we're looking to get a test done to see what our genetics, if there's any markers in the DNA that they know. There's markers in. They don't know where all the markers lie in the DNA to determine, you know, what the likelihood is of you having a child with autism, but they do know some of them, so they can give you, you know, kind of an idea. You know, and that kind of leads me into the next topic I wanted to talk about briefly was I'd love to hear back from you guys on what your thoughts are on whether you would do the genetic testing that we were, going to be doing. Or if you think it's just better to leave it to God and, you know, if you want to have a child, have a child, and whatever happens, happens. And, you know, and if you do have the test, you know, depending on what it says, how would that affect, you know, your decision to move forward and have more children or not? It's kind of a tough topic to discuss, and you know, I know it is for me. It's hard to make a decision when it comes to it because you know, you have ideas, goals, dreams, thoughts, and you don't always know what direction to go. So that's definitely a tough one for me. another topic I wanted to briefly talk about is the dentist. You know, Grayson's gone to the dentist. We have a second appointment coming up again. It actually went really well. Obviously, they can't do a full cleaning on him or even really much of a cleaning at all. But, you know, they did do an exam. And one of the things we've learned is that, you know, take your kids to the dentist, even if you don't think it's going to go very well. Take them young. Take them early and often. And treat it like it's desensitization therapy. Just bring them there. Have them sit in the chair. Have them, you know, touch the table and, you know, the light or whatnot. And just get them comfortable with being in that environment. So then as they get a little bit older, you can actually start having them work with the dentist and examine their teeth better and clean. And, you know, obviously that's the goal. But desensitization therapy or that model is the best way to kind of get kids used to that. I know we haven't really talked about the dentist, so I wanted to bring that up. You know, another thing as well, one thing we don't know how to overcome quite yet is we've been doing the potty training still, and Grayson, what he does is he holds his you know, piss and shit all day until we get a diaper on him at the end of the day, and that's when he lets loose. And it, you know, it's been quite tough getting him on the potty all the time and not having him go, and then all of a sudden we put a diaper on him and, you know, there it is. Because, I mean, obviously he sleeps with a diaper on. We go out places, he has a diaper on. So, you know, later in the day, if we're going out somewhere, we put it on him, all of a sudden we have to change him right away because he filled up the whole thing. He's been holding his pee all day. So we're still trying to figure out how to get past that. If anybody out there has ever encountered that, you know, why don't you pass on some, you know, nuggets of advice for that. You know, could definitely, you know, we're learning from you guys sometimes too with some of the questions and comments you get. Like, it causes us to look deeper at certain things and, you know, get a new perspective. And, you know, we've learned a lot, you know, from doing this show. So it's been pretty awesome. Yeah, I think that's all I have for you guys today. Hope you enjoyed some of that information. Like I said, I have the link to the article and all the research studies in the show notes. So check that out. Some great information there. I guess with that.
For Autism, Building the puzzle, one piece at a time. I'm Sean.
And I'm Alex.
Signing off.
Take care, everybody.
Building the puzzle, we understand how difficult and challenging it can be for parents with autistic children that have communication delays. Well, if you're in New Jersey, you're in luck. The Speech Paradigm has you covered. They're helping children overcome speech challenges all across New Jersey. They offer both telehealth services as well as in-home therapy. Please reach out to them. You can take a look on their website at www.thespeechparadigm.com. You can reach out by phone at 732-203-5268. You can also find them both on Facebook and Instagram as well at The Speech Paradigm. We are also sponsored by Grayson & Company, making homemade toys. They have everything from wooden homemade toys to sensory bins, sensory boards, all different kinds of toys for your children. They can be reached at grayson-company.myshopify.com, as well as on Facebook and Instagram, as well as Etsy. On Etsy, they can be found at Grayson and Company Toys.